Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Jave Yoshimoto's art has been influenced by the unceasing waves of natural and humanitarian disasters around the world, as well as the media's often ephemeral depiction of these events. A Tulsa Artists Fellowship alumnus, Yoshimoto is currently an art professor at the University of Nebraska at Omaha and has also received a Joan Mitchell Foundation career grant. In his latest exhibit at Living Arts of Tulsa, titled Intractable Chasm, you can see the evolution of his work from a large-scale painting created in response to the Fukushima earthquake and tsunami to his more recent work, inspired some by his volunteer work in the wake of a disastrous earthquake in Nepal and as a volunteer in Greece during the humanitarian refugee crisis there. His most recent work involves the use of laser-engraved wood sculptures. Some, like Ephemeral Propinquity, features a memorial goddess holding a boatload of refugees in a Madonna-like pose. That piece has been shown at a number of Tulsa venues. Others, in this mini-retrospective, if you might call it that, are equally compelling and are seeing their first Tulsa showing. Intractable Chasm is on display at Living Arts now through October 18th. And artist Jave Yoshimoto is my guest today. Jave Yoshimoto, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich.
This new exhibit, Intractable Chasms, looks like it combines work over a decade at least.
Yes.
Is there any overarching theme that led you to put together this particular show?
Yes. Overall, the theme of the show is about humanitarian issues, ranging from natural disasters to more recent humanitarian crisis and so on. I volunteered and went overseas to work with different refugees in Greece, and also went to Nepal to interview different survivors of the earthquake back in 2015. And so it's a culmination of a lot of different stories that I gathered, and I made them into visual compositional format, some of which became paintings and others became more laser cut relief sculptures.
Yeah, that's how I first became familiar with you, from your laser cut engravings. And, of course, I was amazed by the detail of that you can get from this. I assume it comes from a drawing process?
Yes. It's manually drawn by hand, and then it was put into a digital format where I was able to separate to different layers and then cut the different layers and then glue them together and then sand them and finish them.
So it's almost like a still animation format with like a matte and then and various layers on top.
Yeah.
But it's really amazing, just the... You know, that 3D element seems to add a lot to the piece.
Yeah, there's a big physicality that my paintings can provide that these sculptures do. So I find that to be an interesting balance between what I used to do to what I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm. Have you eliminated painting or is it still a part of your life? Now, I know you had an arm injury at some point that sort of limited that.
Yeah, 2 years ago I had this really painful elbow injury where I couldn't hold a paintbrush anymore. And so I had to find a different way to keep working because I had other shows coming up. So I knew that I could still draw digitally using a mouse. So that's what it came down to. And through this process, one of my old colleagues from work said, hey, one of your paintings look like an altar. So I tried to imagine what that painting looks like, an altar, and then actually made the altar. That's kind of how it all started. It became an experiment that was fairly successful, so I just kept going with it.
Is that the one that is known today as Ephemeral Propinquity?
Yes.
And this is one of the first works I think I saw of yours. It's been on display at various places around the city.
Yes.
And as you're from your time as a Tulsa Artist Fellow, and it's an incredibly poignant piece. It came out of, I guess, this trip in 2016 to Greece at the
yes.
height of the refugee crisis. What led you to first go to Nepal? Because it sounds like Nepal came first.
Actually, the whole idea started back in 2015. I was still painting, and I saw some limitations in the way I was painting because I was relying on stories by other people, other news outlets, other people's photographs. And when I was nominated for this Joan Mitchell Foundation grant, I made a pitch. If I receive this grant, I'm going to go overseas. I'm going to go interview people, and I'm going to go take my own pictures. And from the first-hand stories, I'm going to make these new compositions. So that's kind of how it all started, with the grant, the proposal, and then trying to address my own shortcomings in the way I was doing research and making paintings. So I think the personal interaction I had gave it more powerful meaning for me to try to make these new compositions. And even though I used similar strategies, it became more personal to me because I was hearing stories firsthand. And ephemeral prop Incuity is based on a local mythology about the Virgin Mermaid who helped sailors cross the seas to safety, where I reimagined her as a refugee woman helping fellow refugees cross the sea to safety. So it's a combination of local mythology, local art history, architecture, and so on, and a more contemporary context.
Really, it combines classic art history, too, because you're, right. You know, there's imagery from the Greeks, yeah. As well as, you know, early Christian art history, you know, because she's right. holding the pose of almost like the Pieta, you know, it's
yeah, there's a lot of Byzantine art that's present there, so I want to make a reference to that as well. So it's kind of like a Madonna child, except the child is above all refugees.
Yeah. Obviously, seeing a situation post-earthquake in Nepal and seeing the refugee crisis unfold had to have a profound influence on how you approach art making.
Yeah, I think there were times where I had emotionally trying to keep it together because it was just so much to really take in. And to see people suffer and to see that I'm only making a contribution as far as like these, you know, blink of an eye to these people's lives and just making these paintings, I just feel like I feel helpless still. It made me wonder if there's any value to the work that I do because I just feel like I'm just exploiting them in some way. But at the same time, this way I want to retell the story so that people can remember these stories are still happening today.
There's some very powerful work in this show. I was struck by a number of pieces, but a number of the laser engravings, three small 3D wood pieces that you refer to as tokens of passage. And yeah. It's 50 euros written in Greek script.
Yes.
Gives you a life ring.
Yeah.
100 euros, a life preserver, and 1,000, a life raft.
Yes.
There must be a story behind this.
Yeah, it's based on the story I got from one of the refugees I interviewed from Damascus, Syria. And he said that's exactly the toll he had to pay to cross the seas. And they're given a choice to pay these amounts to the human traffickers, whom they had to be in the middle of the night at a coffee shop, say, well, if you want a boat ride, it's going to be 1,000 euros. Which is like $1,100 US, or here's a life jacket that's 100 euros, but it may be a fake, might not be real, because the human traffickers also recruit the refugees to make these fake life jackets so they can sell them. And once you're in the water, you'll never know if you're actually going to float or not.
Yeah.
That's a scary thing.
There's the ephemeral piece, and there's a couple of other pieces. I've seen you make it almost like an altarpiece with another one called The Dew of Eos.
Yes.
In this show, you have a version where you're actually using a recovered life jacket.
Yes. So that is the life jacket I actually picked up from the beach, one of the ones that the refugees were wearing. Actually, I have a whole bag full of them that I brought back. One was intact and the rest without the inserts of the foam. And I know I just wanted to use this somehow, and it just felt poignant to have to use this on my painting so that there's this real thing that's happening, you know, that was brought back. Hey, this is something that's really happening, not just illusionary space that I'm creating as a painting.
Yeah. And what we see in this show is we see these pieces as the laser engravings. But we also see them as the paintings, too.
Right. And the paintings came first, and they were the original design. And from the paintings came the laser cut pieces.
Yeah. We also see a number of paintings, including some really some amazing work on this disaster series that you've been doing, which combines, it has to have probably some classic Japanese artwork, like I think from woodcuts and things as sort of the motif elements. But there's Godzilla and monsters in them too.
Yes.
Along with these images of disaster. Mm-hmm. Where did this series come from?
Long story short, I started using Godzilla as a symbolism for myself because I always feel like wherever I travel, I stick on like a sore thumb and I always feel attacked by certain stereotypes or prejudice, some racism. And so whenever I saw Godzilla in movies, he's attacked wherever he goes by humans or other monsters. He just can't be left alone. So that's kind of how I use Godzilla as myself as a symbol to include myself in a painting of sorts as a kind of a joke, but at the same time, also poignant point that I was trying to make.
I think there's some pieces where it is front and center as a part of the artwork, and then other times it's almost like a Where's Waldo thing. You know,
there's right. It's more
somewhere
backdrop.
In the background, there's a Godzilla back there.
Right.
Yeah. And so I guess there is some humor in it, but there's also sometimes it it's making a larger point.
Yeah, and I think humor is the most accessible way to talk about a serious topic. So I usually try to use bright colors, flat and graphic illustrations to bring the audience in and help them find something that's kind of humorous and then make them look into the composition even deeper and then make them realize that, hey, there's something else happening here. So take a look at the issue I'm trying to talk about.
The ambiguity of threat strikes me as one of those things. You like to use text as well, and there's the famous Sic Semper Tyrannis, which is, yes, of course, what John Wilkes' book said, with thus always with the tyrants.
Yep.
And this very mod-colored landscape, just vibrant colors. Mm-hmm. There's an attacking airplane. There's floating hazardous waste. And then there's Godzilla. I guess that ambiguity of threat is like, you know, which threat are you going to pick?
Right. So this was back in 2013 when I made the composition, when I think U.S. was considering the strikes against Syria for the government using gas on their
chemical weapons
on their citizens. So that was kind of a commentary on that issue.
Yeah. Well, when I was talking about the large work, the big piece in this show is your huge, and I'm going to say 35, 36 feet. I sat and measured it off with my just step-taking paces. But this huge Fukushima painting called Baptism of Concrete Estuary.
Yes.
I assume this comes out of the Fukushima earthquake?
Yes. So back in 2011 when the earthquake happened, I was in grad school and I felt like I had to respond. I couldn't sleep for 3 days. And all I got was these flood of images that's flowing from Japan. And I just collected every single imagery. I wanted to create a memorial of some sort. So I spent the next year, I guess 10 and a half months just to make this painting so that this is something that will always be remembered. And after I completed the painting, what I did was I made prints and sold them for charity and donated every single penny to a nonprofit in Japan where it was used for art classes for kids so they could recover from the trauma of surviving the earthquake and tsunami.
And you'll see some of the details in the show, but then you see the whole unrolled painting there, which is... Again, what is it, 35, 36 feet?
That's about 31 feet, actually.
31 feet.
Yeah.
Well, really quite amazing. I mean, you have all these images from, you know, images of the power plant in the mm-hmm. background to people fleeing, you know, this refugee image to the soldiers and the National Guard called out to, you know, the land moving, the tsunami, everything that's a part of this tragic scene.
Yeah, it's very hard to encompass everything that goes into a disaster. And so I try to cram as much as I can into the painting. So there's not like one narrative that's happening. It's just everything that surrounds it that I could think of.
My guest today is Jave Yoshimoto. He's an art professor at the University of Nebraska at Omaha. He's a former Tulsa Artist Fellow. And his exhibit, Intractable Chasms, is on display now through October 18th at Living Arts of Tulsa. He's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. If you've been to our galleries, the Gilcrease in the last few years, you've seen his work. It's really amazing work, and it's a full show. And I guess this is almost, what, about 10 years worth of work over the years? Yeah. I want to ask about one of the first images I saw when I came in there. And it's I think it's called Stray Dog Strut, but it's really, I think it's a pretty satiric look at our consumer society. It's a vinyl banner, which in and of itself, doing it on vinyl banner just sort of says, you know, this is consumer culture. And, you know, you have these quotes by Richard Nixon. If you think the U.S. has stood still, who built the largest shopping center in the world? And so where did this piece come out of?
So I grew up in a very consumerist culture, you know, being both in Japan and the U.S. And I do love shopping. That is my guilty pleasure. Black Friday is my ultimate holiday. I would line up. I would get the deals. I'm totally ashamed and not at the same time. So this is my way of embracing that idea that I love consumerism. I love shopping. And so every single type of store that I love to shop at, Walmart, Target, Best Buy, discount dollar stores.
GameStop.
thrift stores, Chinese restaurants. I mean, they're all in there because everything is like a party to me. So it's my way of admitting, this is my shame, but this is my joy.
And I love that one of the quotes there says, shopping is like a contact sport. We enjoy the scrimmage, the noisy crowds, the danger of being trampled to death, and the ecstasy of the purchase. Is that your quote?
That is a quote from somebody else, but it certainly applies to me.
That is utterly different than anything else in the show. Why decide to include that?
Because I think sometimes I need a humor for myself to get away from the really heavy topic I address in my paintings. But at the same time, this is also a pretty serious topic that I'm trying to address for myself, I guess. Trying to control my consumerism in a way that it's more healthier than I have been in the past.
Yeah. Some of the paintings really struck me as really interesting. There was a several that there sort of a series, I think, in a way, which just sort of show environmental damage. One called, I've seen it titled two ways, Venus of the Nomadic Seas and Venus of Trash Isle. And it is a Venus figure with just surrounded, a mermaid figure.
Yes.
Surrounded by waste on the beach. Another piece that I, at first glance, I thought it was a group of people rescuing sea mammals or marine mammals, some dolphin or small whale species.
Yeah.
Then when I actually look close, no, actually they're slaughtering them. It's called a Numinous Lethologica.
Yes.
What was the inspiration for these? Were these, again, taken from news images that you've seen?
Yes. So with the Venus of Trash Isle, it was more about the garbage patch in the Pacific Ocean. That's about the size of Texas that I imagine if there is an actual island, or that there must be a Venus, a queen, that rules these trash island. So it's kind of, again, a satirical, tongue-in-cheek way of addressing the serious topic. And you can see Godzilla in the background tripping on the trash. As far as like Numinous Lethologica, it's also about the whaling practices in the Faroe Islands by Denmark and Britain. It's a tiny small island. They've always relied on pilot whales for their fuel and food source. But nowadays, it's an annual tradition to trap them in the bay to slaughter them by masses. So I'm questioning the, I guess, the humanitarian issue regarding that behavior. While it's not my place to make any judgments about another person's culture or another culture in general, I think I just want to look at how bloody and crude that can be from an outsider perspective. And I just want to encourage people to just come to their own conclusions about, you know, what they think the topic's about.
What it's also interesting in the show is seeing how your work using this laser engraving technique has evolved, because you know, you could see some of the earlier pieces that have started out as paintings and became these engravings. Then you see some of this new work, I think, which looks like it's newer work.
Yeah.
In which you're really doing some really interesting things. The one was of In Ravage Of, which is, again, this 3D, it's a sculpture, really. It's a sculpture of a wooden digital camera with a refugee scene on the viewfinder.
Yeah.
And when you look through the eye hole, you see the same scene in the eye hole. It's obviously some serious work went into this particular piece.
Yeah, I was actually inspired by photojournalists for that particular piece and how they travel across the world to be in these dangerous places and to document these war-ravaged countries and how people survive in those situations. So the camera is an homage to those photojournalists, and the image that's inside the camera itself is about, again, the humanitarian issues that, you know, war can bring to survivors and refugees.
The idea of actually putting the image that you see in the screen viewfinder also in the eye hole, I assume it's just with laser and, you know, computer technology, you can burn it down to that small image. But how did that come about?
Well, with the smaller image, I actually had to shrink my drawing and then I crop in the circle so I could fit into with the viewfinder. But obviously the big image is the one that's in the at the bottom. So it wasn't too hard to do, but I just wanted to actually reflect what's happening up top and what's happening at the bottom screen. So,
And when I say this wooden digital camera, it's probably about the size of a bread box, really, or maybe a little bigger.
Yeah, it's about 12 by 18-ish and by 3 inches thick or something like that.
Yeah. The other thing that I saw was interesting, it was you had this series of banjos.
Yes.
From New Orleans. And it really struck me because it reminds me a lot of Red Groom's 3D work, where you have this banjo image. And again, you have these layered, colored sculptural images within the banjo. But yep. as I was reading later, there is a real serious message in this. You're in at least one in Constant Sorrow, which features the front of a shotgun house
yes.
and some imagery of New Orleans. You actually have New Orleans lead contaminated soil
yes.
in it. Yeah.
Yeah. So when I was doing a residency at the Joan Mitchell Center in New Orleans this summer, and the first thing I wanted to do was something New Orleans based. And turns out all my works there turned out to be New Orleans based. But this first project, I heard about the lead poisoning from the dirt and how that affected children. So that was the first thing I wanted to do. So I got this small banjo ukulele to make that sculpture inside of. And then I thought it would be important, really relevant to use the actual soil that these kids are being poisoned from. So I went to the local site where it's one of the highest lead contaminated areas, dug up the dirt, and then sifted it and molded it inside the banjo. So. Yeah.
And it sounds like that residency was inspirational. I mean, New Orleans has been inspiring mm-hmm. artists of all stripes for generations. Yeah, how did it inspire you?
Just to hear the local stories. I think after coming back from Greece and Nepal, I just wanted to go and travel around the country to see what local stories I can collect and what kind of pieces I can make out of these local stories. So obviously the banjo being a couple of the stories that I collected, and based on the history, based on architecture, based on, you know, history of people as well. So, yeah, it was just a really powerful experience to be there.
What also comes out in your work is you're attuned to current events pretty tightly, I would say. Are you a news junkie that, you know, and when you see something that moves you in some way, angers you or whatever, that inspires an art piece?
It really depends on how I click with the story itself. I mean, I don't think I'm any more news junkie than any ordinary person with a smartphone. But sometimes I resonate with the story, and when I feel inspired by it, I definitely want to make a piece about it. So,
I want to ask you about the two flag boxes, 7 by 45. Mm-hmm. I figured out 45 right off the bat. It says 7 is kneel for peace. Mm-hmm. 45 stand for violence. So
yes.
Obviously 45 is referring to the president. And 7 probably refers to Colin Kaepernick.
Yes.
Did that come out of that story at the time?
I knew that I wanted to make a piece about Colin Kaepernick's protest issue. I found it very interesting because he started kneeling because he talked to a U.S. Army veteran, and he suggested kneeling for the fallen people, in the honor of fallen people. So I thought Kneel for Peace was a very poignant way to symbolize Colin Kaepernick, and number 7 being his jersey number. So that's kind of how I made that reference within that particular flag box.
Yeah. My guest today is Jave Yoshimoto. His new exhibit is titled Intractable Chasms, on display through October 18th at Living Arts of Tulsa, featuring his laser engravings, his paintings, probably a few prints in there as well. And just a variety of work, some of it inspired by current events, others complete from imagination. It's a very nice exhibit of this really fine artist, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, I do want to ask about a couple of pieces. I don't know their date, but I would guess that they're a little older.
Okay.
And they're one is called La Douleur
Esquisse.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they are Among Us. And these look like they're inspired by, well, the one which features MMA fighters with a Fight Club motif.
Yes.
La Douleur Esquisse, or the thing you can't reach, I think that's how it would translate, strikes me as almost like Art Nouveau poster.
Yes.
Inspiration.
Yeah.
And then they're Among Us is comic book style.
Yeah.
So are these older pieces or are they newer pieces?
The La Douleur Esquisse is actually made back in 2014 based on my favorite novel, Fight Club by Chuck Palahniuk. And I didn't want to make a piece based on the movie. I wanted to make a piece based on the novel. So I took various segments from the writing to make this composition and to kind of imagine this author of sorts and also making some visual reference to other art history. So that's kind of how I brought that composition together, because it's always about this group of men who's trying to take out their aggression to really find their personal peace. And as far as They Are Among Us, it's based on the history how monks came to the U.S. and started residing in various parts of the U.S. So I think it started in 1975.
They were allies with us in the Vietnam War.
Right. Yeah. And so I thought it would be really interesting to reference an old comic book cover from the 70s and to kind of make reference to, hey, this is when they came to the States. And this is how they were part of the U.S. because they were assisting the U.S. in military operations and so on.
Obviously, the migrant crisis that you witnessed in Greece made an impression. And of course, today, that migrant crisis is here on our borders. And there's a number of pieces that allude to that, some going back to history. Again, these laser engravings that are taking scenes from the Japanese internment photographs. Mm-hmm. One is, I thought, was very poignant, which is a phone image of an internment photo that was for sale, probably on some
Walmart
auction site. Yeah. Oh, Walmart.
Yeah, it was on Walmart website.
Yeah. So obviously this is a going concern for you today.
Yeah. Again, with the Walmart piece, it was something that I came across randomly on the internet search. And it was a poster that was on sale for $200 or whatever it was. I thought it was something ridiculous. And to sell these imagery of internment camps was just so beyond my thinking that I just had to make a piece about it. And the fact that I saw this on the internet, it was, it seemed to be really important to just create this on like a cell phone type of sculpture. The other internment camp piece is based on my actual travels to Wyoming and seeing the Heart Mountain actual former internment camp being there, and took some imagery and made the pieces based on what I saw and what I photographed.
Yeah. Well, we're just about out of time, but I do want to ask about one piece, which I think may be one of your most recent pieces, and that is, it's called Harvest Dusk, and it is a piece shaped in the state of Nebraska. Is it a brand new piece? First?
Yes, it's one of the newer pieces I made this year, yes.
Yeah, features, I didn't know the name, but there's again, lettering in it. It says Nebraska, a good life. Right. And it's obviously scenes from the floods along the Missouri, I would assume.
Yes, so this past winter, we had the really terrible winter freeze that really affected the majority of the upper Midwest. And so when spring came, all of a sudden, all of it melted and caused massive floods. Nebraska was heavily affected. We lost a majority of our cattle. A lot of farmers lost their homes, lost their lives. So this is my way of kind of paying homage and honor to those people who lost everything.
It's very powerful work, whether you're looking at migrant crisis in the Mediterranean along our border, or just the plight of people in trouble. That seems to be a motivating force for you in your artwork.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm witnessing everything that's happening around the world, and I just want to use my work to bridge communication and really connect with other people. So that's why I make work. I just want to be able to talk about these things and really relate in a human way possible, that we can empathize and be kind to one another.
Well, we hope a lot of people come out to Living Arts to see the work. It's worth seeing. Jave, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich.
Jave Yoshimoto is an art professor at the University of Nebraska at Omaha and an alumnus of the Tulsa Artist Fellowship. His exhibit, Intractable Chasm, is now on display through October 18th at Living Arts of Tulsa. For more information on the exhibit, visit livingarts.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.